All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters? It's Mark Maron. How's it going? This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. I'm not at home. I am, I'll probably be home. I'll be on the way home when you listen to this, but I'm not at home now. I've been in New York City for a few days. As some of you know, maybe you know, I don't know. I checked in on Instagram, which is a rare event for me. I don't really like the pressure of thinking about either tweeting or doing Instagram posts. And I've successfully detached from both of them to the point where I'm like, oh yeah, I should do that occasionally to check in with the folks that would like to hear from me. And I'm not that proficient at it. But anyway, so some of you saw the check-in. I'll try to do more of that. I have been here for a few days, and it has been pretty fun. I'm trying to just sort of... I don't know that some of you know. When you're self-employed, you never really know when work is done. So you kind of always work, and most of what you do is work-related. And obviously, those of you who've been following the show know that I'm, you know, a little out of sorts and a little sort of existentially challenged with my own ability to engage with life in a way that maybe I could find some joy or fun in it as opposed to just relief. But I don't know. It's touch and go, but I'm trying. And I've been here, and I came here to New York because initially there was some GLOW promotional event that got moved, but I had scheduled some interviews there are certain people I can't do in LA because I just don't come to LA that much. I don't see them. And I decided just to come and just do the interviews, the few interviews I had to do. By the way, Maya Erskine and Anna Konkel are on the show today. Their show, Pen 15, is one of the most, it's a funny show. It's a deep show, and I found it very moving. And I don't know if you've watched it. I think it's on Hulu. The first season, you can stream it on Hulu. It's these two actresses, these two women who I talked to, you know, who are actually playing, I believe, seventh graders. They're playing them with other seventh graders. So they're portraying seventh graders, yeah, and they're, you know, in their 30s. But it's incredible how quickly the device doesn't affect you, and how beautiful what happens, and how funny and how sort of human it all is. It's really an interesting and funny show. And when I watched it, I had worked with Anna Konkel on Maron. She's on the last season of Maron. She plays the woman who has my baby. And I liked her then. I thought she was great as an actress. But they created this really unique, fun, but moving show, Pen 15. So they're here. They're not here, but I'm going to talk to them. So I'm doing a few interviews here in New York, and it's weird. I think I've kind of worn out my back when I, at the beginning of this thing, when I used to do interviews on the road, it was because it was hard to get people on the show sometimes, or they didn't know what the show was, or they're only in New York, and there was an urgency to it. Like, we got to get this person. And I still have that to a degree, but I find now when I do these things that on the road that I'm like, it's so much better in my house. It's so much better in my studio. You know, there's a comfort factor I have. I'm not worried about other things. I'm in an environment that is conducive and to what I do. And I had an interview yesterday where I had some technical problems, and I'm here with a guy that, you know, you all know, and we're in the room and we're doing the thing. And then the recorder, all of a sudden I notice it's not recording, and I got to, you know, stop myself from completely spinning out with a big actor, you know, who's sitting there, and I'm like, oh fuck, I got, you know, I mean, you've heard me spin out, and, you know, and then I got to kind of manage that. And, you know, he was a good sport about it, but it made me feel like a fucking doofus. So I really don't need any new reasons to feel like a doofus. It worked out, but I'm just expressing this to you because it was a feeling I was working through. So after that, you know, I'd kind of, after I felt like a doofus and I had to manage this situation, and it all worked out, but it was sort of trying. And then after that, I kind of tumbled down into some sort of chasm of self, about, you know, my life. And obviously, look, I'm not complaining. Everything's going good. But there was just something about that moment that triggered a bunch of other insecurities. And then I was kind of spiraling and, you know, in the sadness of that I'm dealing with in, you know, in my life a little bit. And then I was just here. I was here in the room doing that. And that's, you know, and then I've always realized this, but you got to talk to your friends, man. I mean, go out and talk to your friends. I mean, I've told you on this show that a lot of times these conversations I have with people I don't know are the deepest conversations that, you know, I have, and they're full and they're satisfying, but then the person goes away. And that's there's something good about that. But like your friends, you know, go spend time with your friends if you have them. Don't just text them. And I'm not great at it. I've only got a few friends. But that night when that happened, I was kind of spinning, and, you know, I'd made plans with my buddy Sam Lipsyte. A few things fell into place. Me and Brendan were supposed to go to see a show, the All My Sons, the Arthur Miller revival that my buddy Tracy Letts is in, and Annette Bening, both of who've been on the show. Tracy and I have become friends, so, you know, I texted him to see if I could go to the show, and his wife set me up with some tickets because he doesn't like to know when people he knows are in the room. And Brendan had some issues with his plumbing, so he couldn't go, so I called my friend Sam, who I was going to see on Wednesday night, but he said he could do Tuesday night. So I went out with Sam. We went to Alex Guarnicelli's restaurant. This is the one good thing about doing this show over the years is I don't use the relationships that much, and I don't like to use people, but I will, you know, give people a heads up who I have had on the show who I like. Like if I'm in New York and I want to eat a good dinner, I'll text Alex Guarnicelli and I'll say like, I want to go to your restaurant. You're going to be there? I'd like to say hi. And she's like, no, but you can go. And they don't, it's not like they give me, yeah, I still got to pay and everything, but it's nice to, you know, to say hi. But when you do go to a chef's restaurant, you will get sent a few good dishes that you didn't expect were coming. And that if you're me, kind of when they arrive at the table, you go like, oh, fuck, how are we going to, oh, that looks amazing. I had something that she calls veal bacon last night. It was just a slab of fatty veal meat, deeply cooked and salted with a sauce on it. And me and Lipsyte took one bite each of it, and we looked at each other and almost started crying. And then we ate a fucking double T-bone. And I can't even, all I know is it's like, it's the day after that happened. And I don't think I need to eat today. I'm packed with meat. So anyways, my point being, Sam and I talked, we hung out, you know, I kind of let go of like whatever I was spiraling about, you know, it was great to see my friend, and then we go see the play, which was phenomenal. This is the other thing I'm talking about, new things, is like, I don't know, I'm not a theater nerd, I don't know, I haven't read a lot of Arthur Miller. I know who he is, I know what he's written, I've seen a couple of the big plays in one sense or another, either in a film production or live, but I never saw this one, All My Sons. And Tracy's in it, and it's a, you know, it's an older play, and it's about, you know, some World War II related story. But I don't know the play, and I don't know how it ends. So I'm coming to it with completely new eyes. It might as well come out yesterday. It might as well have just been written. I mean, I could see that it was dated, but I was completely engaged to the point where when we went backstage to say hi to Tracy and Annette, you know, they were all sort of freaked out because there was a phone in the theater that apparently was ringing for 6 minutes, and I didn't even fucking notice it because I was immersed in the story. And that was great. Tracy was great. The cast was great. It's so exciting to go to theater, and we go backstage, we see them, and then Tracy wants to get something to eat. So me and Sam and Tracy, we go out to this place, Joe Allen's, for food. I see Michael Showalter there. He's with a crew of people. And it was like, this is my community, this is my life, and these are my friends, and we had a nice chat, and I had a good time. I guess that's what I'm trying to tell you. I had a good time. I've had a good time. Okay, I'm saying it out loud. I, you know, there was some darkness, but there was some fun, and I had it. Uh-oh. And then I'm at the hotel, and there's all these, you know, all these fans out front of somebody, just mostly teenage girls, it looked like, and they were waiting, and I realized it's the Met Ball. Apparently, some people are staying at this hotel. So there were people out there of all kinds just waiting to look at people for like 2 days. And then all of a sudden, I run into Bob Saget at the hotel, and I'm like, I think there's a lot of people out there waiting to see you. So be careful when you go outside. Of course, that wasn't true. It's Bob Saget. I think he's downstairs right now. Yeah, so I sat there, smoked a cigar in front of the hotel, and just kind of watched as a few people got into their cars for the Met Ball. I did not know who they were. They seemed to be dressed, they were wearing theme parks almost. I just don't, like, it was just like, what's happening? This person is dressed up as a carnival of some kind. But it was exciting and they were excited, but I'm just that old man now where I'm like, who was that? Should I know that person? Is that somebody? That's always the great old person question. Is that somebody? That must be somebody. Look at that. They're wearing a building. That must be somebody. So I might go see another play tonight. I'm not going to eat any more meat. And I'm going to share with you this lovely talk I had with Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle about how they came up with their fun and moving show, that Pen 15, that's you can stream on Hulu. It's got picked up for a second season. And kind of found out where they come from, their journey together. So this is me talking to Maya and Anna back in my house. Maya Erskine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like Erskine.
It does. I don't fault you.
Yeah. I'm Marin. You can't imagine what I've got in my whole life.
Moron.
But I think they know what they're doing. I think they know. They know it's not my name. Right. Anna Conkle.
Yeah.
So I work with you on my show. You played the woman who had my baby.
I did.
Yeah. And that was good.
You were so nice to me.
That last day of shooting was rough.
Oh my God.
Remember, you were sick.
Oh, that's right.
It was terrible.
Oh, I blocked that out.
You blacked out. I blacked it out.
It was like such a horrible day.
There was a baby.
Yeah.
Then the first baby didn't look like us.
We had to do a racist thing.
Right.
What happened?
I'll tell you.
Well, yeah.
We got a baby because when you shoot with babies, you got to have two of them.
Yeah.
And they, you know, we saw pictures and this was a baby that, like, I'm Jewish and we were like, you know, this baby can play. So we hired the baby and we shot one scene with the baby and I'm looking at him like, you know, that baby's black. And it's just, that is an African-American baby. And I'm like, you know, unless we really change what's, you know, I understand it could be an art thing.
Right.
Where you don't make, but that's not the show we're doing. So I had to say to the showrunners, I'm like, what are you guys thinking? We have to get a new baby. So we had
So you got a new baby. I think it'd be more racist if you kept that baby and just.
Yeah, I don't know if it was racist. I think
I don't think it's racist.
We were misled.
Yes,
I believe.
Yes.
I'd like to think that that we didn't get what we thought we were getting.
Right.
And then the next baby was all right.
The next baby was a nice baby.
Yeah.
Did you hold the baby?
I held the baby.
That's great.
Held the baby, and then we had a scene at the end. That last scene came out really good. But yeah, we're not here to talk about my show, are we?
But I was very happy to be on it. And that was the first time also seeing, like, someone making their own work and then being in their own work. And that was very inspiring. So.
Really? I helped?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, so that's
we
nice.
Talked about it a lot.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, no, we did.
Really?
Yeah. She was really impressed by how you were able to manage running the show, writing it, going inside, acting, directing. Like, it was just something that felt then achievable.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, I was watching your show, and there are details in the show where I'm like, why is this like this? It has to be real. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because, like, in my show, there's definitely a lot of real stuff. Not so much the season you were in, because that's speculative. But, like, the details about your parents and that kind of stuff, I'm like, this isn't made up. How can this be made up?
Yeah.
I mean, your dad is a real drummer.
He is,
but he's not a loser drummer.
No, yeah.
He was actually in Steely Dan. I mean, Dan. Right?
Yeah. He was in Steely Dan, but it was his idea to do a Steely Dan cover band to make it a less...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like very specific that, you know, they're playing at a pool at a hotel. So it's not.
Right.
So, like, you know, if I have one sort of weird kind of like question about that character, it's like, how is he not more bitter?
Yeah. I
I think we could dig in more to that at some point. And we also thought it was funny having him be like, you know, if you want to rise to my level, like you really need a car. And for a small town in my town, personally, like art was not celebrated.
Yeah.
So that seemed realistic that he could be touring.
He could be a small town celebrity.
Of course, of course he could be touring. But it's usually like, I like that he's a decent guy, because usually the touring sort of low-level musician, that's a sordid story.
It is. It's not.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, right. But this guy seems like a well-adjusted guy. He's happy with his work and
right.
he's a pretty good dad. He's not coming home like hungover and fucked up and not wanting to talk to anybody.
Season two,
I think we go into the reality of that, because
really?
I think it's funny to see
thought
him
about it?
Have this.
We talked about him being bitter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it sort of comes out, or maybe we didn't end up shooting that, but we wanted to shoot like a scene where he kind of takes it out on me and sort of reveals that he's
not as happy with where his career was.
But he was hard on you, right?
But I think that comes from having a bit of a chip on your shoulder, too.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
But you didn't play it all out.
No, right. Like, we didn't go deeper.
Because you do keep it around the kids. And I think that the idea, like when somebody told me, like I saw those billboards for it. Do you call it Pen 15? Because my girlfriend's calling it penis.
Great.
That's fine, but
call it penis, penis.
Yeah, technically Pen 15, but we like it all.
But like, was that something you wrote in high school? I mean, like Pen 15 is a thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
In middle school, you know, the cool kids would be like, hey, do you want to join my club, Pen 15? And you'd be like, yeah, of course. All right. Then they take a Sharpie and write Pen 15 on your hand, and then you'd have penis on your hand.
And you'd
day.
Have to explain that to your parents. It's
yeah.
Like, no, it's Pen 15.
Right. I'm part of a club, you guys.
Well, that was the weird thing is like, I'd see the billboards and I was like, what the fuck is that?
Right.
What is that show?
I know. We named it many years ago as like an ode to the rejects, and then it's taken 6 years to make it, so it's like changed and
six years.
And the premise, the conceit is that you're in seventh grade.
Yes.
But you're surrounded by real seventh graders, and you guys are just you're in your 30s,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And like at first I was like, how's that gonna work? But then like within 5 minutes you're like, that's they're just
you forgot grade. Sometimes
no.
I don't know, the wrinkles, you're just like, they
no well that stuff doesn't matter, because like the challenge of playing the emotions of those of that age must be pretty satisfying in the actor way, because like you, Maya's character, like I'm literally makes me uncomfortable. Like to the point where I'm like,
so sorry.
That,
he no, just but, looked to the side, not at Maya.
In a good way. Like, because I think that you sort of, because your challenges are different. Yours are primarily parental, and hers are like this weird sexual
complex.
Drive and menstrual problems.
Right.
But like the way you play the sort of anger about it and the confusion about it, it's like, it's you really sort of go there, and it's sort of, it must have been, if it was awkward for me, it must have been a little awkward for you.
I think it was awkward at first because we filmed the masturbation scenes first week. So we shot out of order, and here I am rubbing it out in front of like 10 crew guys, just like, what the fuck is
in
this
a bowl
shit?
Cut and a mustache.
Yeah, they had no idea, you know. And I'm rubbing like my flat nipples with My Little Ponies. Like it was just an absurd thing to do and to go there. But it is actually incredibly cathartic and easy to go to those emotions, because I didn't realize that those are still so raw for me, like from that
really?
Time. Yeah.
So this was, you're actually working through some real trauma in a way?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone called it a traumedy, which we love.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but the same, what was your parents' situation? Was it like that?
Yeah, but that's more the vanilla, to be honest, more the vanilla version of it.
That mother character is not that vanilla. I mean, you know,
okay,
she's daunting.
She's Melora does such a good job, but she's
what's
less
her last
based
name again?
On my mom,
Walters.
She's like great.
She's amazing.
So
she's great.
I
she's in
I don't
all
know
the like
why
P.T.
she
Anderson
agreed
movies.
No, I know. Like every like I remember seeing her and being like, where like what?
How did
I
they get her?
Well, no, I just like, where has she been? You know, like, because I know they always work, but she's such a specific and great actress that, yeah, like, I always like seeing her, and you're always like, why isn't she in everything?
Right, I
because
know.
Because she's very intense, and it's a very...
she's so good.
She's really great, yeah.
You do a good impression of her.
Oh, you do?
And it's just sort of like, hey, guys, how do you want... So how should I do the scene?
Yeah.
I love her.
So it's not quite like your mom?
She's different. My mom was more... kind of, I think we would go there if we got another season, but more into crystals and Reiki and
really,
and meditating. And what I think so funny about her as a person was like, she was the most, you know, stressed out meditator. Like, I didn't know anyone more insane. Right. And I love her deeply. And she's.
But desperate for some sort of spiritual relief.
Yeah. And honest and authentic with it. It wasn't bullshit. It was like, she really is one of the most spiritually deep people that I know.
Yeah.
And she, and that's, I think that's kind of common.
Yeah.
And she like was short circuiting all, you know, she worked a lot of jobs. She was busy. She had a lot going on. She wasn't happy in the relationship with my dad, but they were married for 20 years and they tried to, but it was like, was he on the, he probably was on the couch like half of
sweeping on
life.
The couch. So that's a real thing.
Yeah.
So had to wake up and your dad was sweeping on the couch.
Yeah. And I remember my friends coming over and like being like, oh, and I've told you this a million times, but like, oh my God, I got to get the sheets, like fold the sheets. And then like, I remember like reorganizing the family photos so that people didn't suspect.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I was
really?
Very crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's like, I mean, I think that's a real thing, and it must be, you know, some of the benefit of doing this show is to sort of really look at those situations and understand kind of in your heart the pressures that were put on you at that age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's like, how is it not traumatic on some level, and how does it not really dictate the rest of your life?
Right.
That you're just trying to manage chaos at home, or you're trying to manage not being able to talk about things. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the life you're living now and you're like, oh my God, that's why I do that.
Right.
Yes.
Totally. And I think, you know, like I've been to so much therapy and how much that that time comes up. And that was something that Maya and I always.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And you were one of the first people, women, that would talk about masturbating, like, at a party as like funny and like and what you were ashamed of at the
but
same time.
But that was my way to process through it, and it was the same for Anna. She would talk about divorce and make jokes about it,
right.
And that was the way to like cut through the dark pain of just making fun of it.
Right, but so many times, and which I think is good about the relationship you guys have in the show, is that you know, you're still sort of the weirdos in a way. Like, because if you're that kind of person that deals with it like that, where you just bring it up, and then you got a room full of kids going like, what? Like, I think so much about the show that makes it work, because you guys are specifically connected and slightly off from the rest of the standard junior high hierarchy. But to everybody, like, I'll tell you, man, the kids are great.
Yeah,
I mean, no, that guy, the sax player,
Brendan
Brady,
right?
Allen is the actor. He's a gem.
He really, you know, like, he holds the scene. Like, when he's sitting on the couch, you're like, this guy's in charge.
Yes. Yes.
That's exactly what we want from him. Yeah,
so
he's in charge.
True.
When he nods confidently after Anna,
it's crazy.
Goes off to, after he hooks up with Anna, he's like, yep.
Yeah.
Just like
because, and he's so like, you know, physically, and he was. I definitely know the type of guy that he was at that age. He was sort of like a kind of proud nerd. You know what I mean?
Like a cocky nerd.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And also slight, like a man,
like a 50-year-old
man,
13-year-old's body.
And he was a little different from his character, but he would drink a like extra large Red Bull every morning, and he was only allowed one. And we
the real guy,
the real kid, and he would like level out, you know, just be so calm during the shooting
after the Red Bull,
after pounding a Red Bull. And
he's
we're
got
like, great,
a Ritalin effect,
right? Exactly,
yeah, yeah.
But where'd you grow up?
Massachusetts and Vermont, mostly Massachusetts,
what town?
Situate,
oh
south
my
of Boston.
God. Situate, yeah, I know Situate,
yeah, really, why?
I had a troubled friend from Situate.
Oh, well.
The Dumfies, Arthur Dumphy.
Oh, wow.
You don't know.
Well, my third grade teacher was a Dumphy. That's the thing. There's generations people don't leave.
Yeah, wow. I spent a lot of time in New England. Like, I know.
For him?
No, because I went to college in Boston. I went back and started my comedy career there. So I toured all over doing one-nighters all over.
That's right. I remember you.
In that weird area. So, like, how old were you when your parents got divorced?
I was 14 when they told me, and then they lived in the same house for, they like split up the house for 2 years while they were going to court.
They split the house up?
We loved it.
How many kids?
Just me.
Oh, really?
Well, I have a half brother, but he grew up at his dad's house. He's 11 years older. So when I was old enough to, you know, he was in a different state. Yeah.
Which dad? How'd that work?
The dad, same mom.
Oh, your mom had another husband.
Had another husband.
Before your dad.
Before my dad.
So she's a searcher.
She's a searcher. What does that mean? She's searching for love. She is.
Well, I mean, the spiritual quest and the,
yes, you know, right.
There's a couple of husbands.
That's like, the thing. The thing that I respect about her, and she's given to me, which now I go to therapy for, is like always questioning.
Yeah, yeah.
Always like.
Why be confident or secure when you're not right?
Is it right? Yeah, exactly. Right, right. But then always trying to find your rightness.
Yeah, right. Yeah, great. Thanks, Mom.
But the nice part about it is she's so courageous in her quest for, she like lives her life. You know, she's not bored. She's in her mid-70s. She just told me the other day, she's like, I have a writing partner.
Uh-huh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. Now she's going to make a
nurse.
Show about...
Oh, my God.
About you're going to be producing
daughters.
A show.
I'm up for it. Her show would be fucking crazy. I would love it.
I would love it. Too.
But okay. And you, where'd you grow up?
I grew up here in L.A.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know.
The whole time?
The whole time. And I lived in New York for school, but then
we
met in New York. But I grew up here.
And your mom's Japanese?
My mom's Japanese.
And your dad's a drummer.
Dad's a drummer from Jersey.
That's his ethnicity. Drummer.
Exactly, drummer.
And
jazz
that's her
drummer.
Real mom in the show.
Yeah, that's my real mom.
Really?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Who walks in while she's masturbating and says like, "Oh, I smell yams."
I know.
Had she acted before?
No.
Really?
I mean, I had put her in my student films when I would, you know, direct little videos, but she was not an actress.
Why'd you decide to do that? It seems like a big risk. I know Aziz did it and people do it, but like, it's like, is it, it worked out.
It was a risk. I mean, well, we first filmed a presentation with Lonely Island.
That was like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. And we had maybe 5 people come in to audition for the mom, and none of them were from Japan. And it was really important to me to have someone who was from Japan and not put on an accent. And I was like, well, let's just try it, mom. Mm-hmm. And so I filmed, you know, an audition tape with her. Like 25 tapes later, you know, I sent one of them and everyone was like,
she's great.
Yeah, okay, let's try it.
She was game.
And she did great. Like,
yeah,
it was
she's
surprising.
Amazing.
Is she having a good time?
She loves it.
She does.
Yeah, she's really into it.
So how different is she from the character?
She's pretty different. I feel like she's a milder version of herself. And the angry
in the
side.
Show?
Yeah, like I think she was scarier sometimes to me. But then she was also really tender. But there's moments where I'm like, whoa, that is you, mom. That's, you know, the part where she's cutting my hair and talking to me, you know, like, it's okay. It's okay. You know, that felt like
mom. Is that a real thing, the haircut?
She's cut my hair before, but never placed a bowl onto my head. I would never let that happen.
But you had a haircut that looked similarly like, you
I looked
know,
like a boy. Right. Yeah, I was called a boy all the, like, young sir. I've said this a lot.
But I think it's also interesting that there, like, the cultural difference, you know, between how a Japanese household works and, you know, and then, like, the kids being, you know, fundamentally kind of like just American teenagers,
right.
But your mother's sensibility is very specific and traditional in a way.
Yeah.
And in that, like, I think that's, I've not seen that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I hadn't seen that either, really. I hadn't seen my childhood reflected in a way that I'm like, because I have this really Japanese mom and then an American dad, but he was on tour a lot. So I was very influenced by the Japanese culture, but then wanting to glom on to American, you know.
So your dad was, like, is he Jewish?
He's not, but I lied and said I was Jewish in middle school because I went to a primarily Jewish school and I really wanted
that
to
go
be.
Over?
People believed me because I just said my dad is Jewish. So I would lie and say I'm half Jewish, but he's not. He's agnostic.
And but he wasn't brought up in it.
He wasn't, and neither was my mom. I mean, Buddhist, I guess. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole episode with the weird shrine to your grandfather. I mean, but is that real thing?
That is. That's like cultural. I mean, in every Japanese home, you'd see a shrine of ancestors.
Really?
And every time you go into someone's home, they light incense and you just pray to them. And
really?
Yeah, it's become a cultural tradition.
And your dad was in Steely Dan?
Or like, he was, yeah.
I mean, they're not really a band, but he played on some of their records?
He played, yeah. He played and toured with them. He's been in Weather Report. He's
real jazz head.
He's a jazz musician, yeah.
Wait, which albums is Steely Dan records? Because like, I've had some sort of weird catharsis with Steely Dan. I was very against them for all of my life.
Oh,
but not,
why?
I mean,
why? Well, look, no, I'd love to know.
There's no denying, you know, the skill and the songs, but it always felt sterile to me, and there was something annoying about the perfection, which is exactly what people like about them. What everyone likes about them, I'm like, yeah, but I don't feel any soul. Where's the
right?
But for some reason, I went to a play and they were using Steely Dan songs. I just heard something in a different way, and I have all the records downstairs
because
I try every so often to engage.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And then like I finally got it, and I realized like, well, there's a lot of depth here, and some of these guys are really fucking playing, and you know, like I don't know what my aversion was, but then you got to be careful because it'll infect your entire brain. Like if you listen to a lot of Steely Dan, like that's all you can, like you're just going to start eating the other music in your head.
That's so funny that you said that, because when I was a like 4-year-old, I don't know how old I was, but there's a video of me on a hotel bed and I'm listening to Bodhisattva, and I'm like having it's like midnight and I'm just bouncing on the bed going Bodhisattva, Bodhisattva, and I'm in this like religious, you know, fucking hole, and it ate my brain. So I definitely understand what you mean. So I went there.
Did you tour with them? You went on the road
like
with them?
Once or twice, yeah.
Wait, I mean, what years was that? Because they didn't tour a lot
in the
was
90s.
Oh, right. So, yeah,
yeah. Some of the mid-90s. So
you never talked about this with you, and I want to know everything.
We told you I've gone on tour.
Were you
with
on
my
a
dad.
Tour bus? Did you sleep?
No, like there were hotels. You'd fly.
So you knew you hung out with Becker and Fagan.
I hung out with the kids. Like I would hang out with
they all have kids.
Some of them, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But there were issues between. I mean, I'm not going to go into it because I'm sure I'll reveal some crazy shit that my dad said.
Are you still friends with the kids?
No, we were playing in
Dan
the
kids
parking lot,
not
and no, they're not. We're not. We don't have a Thanksgiving text thread. Yeah, it was like once
a support group.
Yeah.
So he was really on a lot of their records then.
I cannot tell you. I'm so sorry.
I know. I can't tell you how many people that I talk to that have no idea what their fathers do.
Really?
Yeah, as grown-ups.
Oh, I know every detail of my dad being a 7-Eleven human resource manager.
You know,
wow.
Yeah.
Now that,
that's impressive.
A little more interesting than Steely Dan.
It is. No.
It really is.
I thought the humor was that it's not, that I know about it.
I'm actually genuine. Okay.
A 7-Eleven human resource what?
Manager.
So what?
Well, yeah. So he wasn't the director of human resources of the whole East Coast, although that was a goal. He was a manager and just like managed and trained people of like how to be a proper employee
at 7-Eleven.
So he was in the corporate world there, but then we would get free Slurpees and hot dogs and stuff.
Were they Slurpees or ice? Slurpees.
Slushies.
Slurpees. Yeah.
Isn't that a 7-Eleven branded?
You're right.
I'm trying to remember.
Jesus, you
like
guys.
I grew up in the Southwest, and there was Icy's. Remember ICE, and they had the polar bear, but I don't know.
Yeah,
what was that? Was that here?
That's also Slurpee,
stations.
Too, I thought.
Oh, wait.
Had a polar bear.
Yeah.
No.
I don't think so.
There's some regional differences sometimes.
Yeah.
I was thinking about 7-Eleven the other day.
Oh.
When I see the sign, I'm comforted somehow.
Like really? Everywhere.
They're still around. I don't think there are as many as there used to be, but when you see them, you're sort of like, oh, there's a 7-Eleven. I should make note of that just in case. Why? Why would
I mean, but
they're everywhere.
It's comforting because they're everywhere.
I guess
like
so.
I went to Japan and there were 7-Elevens there.
Taiwan.
Like, great.
But did you go to the 7-Eleven?
Yeah.
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 And they have,
when you go in Asia, it's, I mean, high quality food. The 7-Elevens there are on
another level.
Fresh fish.
Oh, yeah. Yes, fresh fish.
Actually.
Fish cakes,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But like raw fish too, right?
Yeah. They have sushi. They have, I mean, it's.
I think it's owned by China, a company in China now.
What isn't?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh?
Talk to me about it.
But now there's raw fish here. Like, I don't. Do you eat pokey at strip mall pokey places? I'm not going to do it.
Strip mall? No.
No.
I mean, like, why is there? It doesn't matter.
Well, I've done it, but I don't plan on it again.
Yeah, it's not good.
All right, so your real mom's there, and but also I'm sort of fascinated with the culture, even just the food is exciting. Like, there's all these nuances in the show that you're dealing with. you know, the struggles of teenage girls who are coming into themselves. But also there's a lot of cultural stuff, you know, mm-hmm. too, that kind of like that I found interesting. Like when you eat at their house and you're like, what is this? And,
like that. The yuzu. Yeah.
I remember like even not even a cultural difference, but the first time you go to a friend's house to eat when you're that age and you're used to eating whatever garbage your parents pulled together.
Mind blowing. Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Your mom makes mashed potatoes?
Right.
Right.
Like from real potatoes?
You know, right. Like, yeah. Not the box.
Yeah.
We talked about that a lot.
Yeah. I would have the opposite experience where I would see Gushers and, mm-hmm. you know, all these snacks that we didn't have in our house. And I'd go apeshit, you know, and just like tear through so many bags of Fritos.
Can I ask, do you remember like a friend of yours coming over and being like, ew?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it would smell. I mean, there'd be fish and they'd
pickles,
be like...
Pickles, those weird Japanese pickles.
Yeah. And you know, and also, I think...
That's got to be
but I'd also, if we had ramen, like if there were fun Japanese dishes,
like noodles.
People would be like, yay!
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But like the fish would kind of...
The fish would throw people off. The big head. Yeah.
And then you would also tell me, too, the whole thing of like opening the fridge, right? Yeah. A friend coming over and opening the fridge without asking, which I love that detail.
Hated that. I would have these friends from Crossroads, right. And they were, you know, pretty entitled.
You
and
went so Crossroads.
I went to Crossroads, but I left because I hated it. Hence our show about middle school. But they would just come in, and first thing they would do is open the fridge without asking, right. And just start rifling through. And my mom would watch from a corner and just shame them with her eyes of how dare they just open the fridge.
Yeah,
you know, it was such a cultural.
It's sort of like insane what parents have to deal with and how much they have to kind of just like go with the flow sometimes. Like, you know, because when you really think about your parents, like, what did they fucking know?
Exactly.
I mean, like, my parents were so young when they had me, and it's just sort of like when I think about the age that they were when I was like 10, and I'm and they were like in their 30s. I'm like, what the like? It must be just nuts to have like these strong-willed beings running around fucking up their shit.
Yeah, masturbating in their rooms.
Yeah, and saying they're taking a nap.
Well, how did you like sort of you know, whiteboard the show in terms of like? You know, how did you outline it to deal? Because these are all specific issues that happen in this time zone. And there's stuff that, like, I remember, but I was older, but you guys are younger than me, that when AOL first started, was just happening, and the dial-up modem and all that stuff. You know, I think it was an important episode to show, because that has become literally the cultural cancer that's destroying, you know, all young minds.
Yeah.
And also good for them, but, like, the first... sort of kind of wandering into chat rooms at your age and your parents don't know what the hell you're doing.
Right.
And, you know, it turns out to be a sweet story, but it sort of starts...
Could have gone a lot darker.
But that's a very contemporary sort of memory that I don't have as a teenager, but has a lot of impact. And how did you guys chart out the issues that you were going to deal with?
Well, the first thing we thought of is, okay, we might never get to do this again. So if we only had one season, you know, what are all the things that are really important that happened to us that we would want to explore? So we would just like put a bunch of, you know, we would tell stories for years, really.
And started worked on this for 6 years.
For 6 years.
Really? Six years?
Six years.
Well, let's go back for a second. Okay. Like, so how did... Wait, Crossroads, how long did you go to Crossroads?
I went from kindergarten to ninth, and I transferred to Loxa because it was a public arts high.
Because, like, I don't know much about it. I know it's, like, for rich kids. I know there's sort of a permissive environment and that it's a kind of, like, a kind of a hippie aristocracy. Like
exactly.
Progressive,
rich people, but there are also some non-rich people, and I was one of those. They accept some kids.
Celebrity,
you know,
children. A lot of celebrity children.
There's a lot of celebrity children, a lot of producers' kids, a lot of wealth on another level. Like, it's just an LA industry wealth that is...
How did you, like, in growing up with that, like, I'm a grown-ass person, and when I go to somebody's house that is of that, it's sort of like, what is this life?
It's...
I mean, how do you, like...
I mean, that's the thing, is in elementary school, you didn't really see the class differences, or it didn't come up. But once you hit middle school and people started to buy bags
purses.
And all the purses, like Prada bags that, you know, these are 12-year-old kids, and then bar and bat mitzvahs,
crazy.
where they were spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on weddings. Like, they were massive parties every weekend. And so that was when wealth became a huge issue for me, and I felt very inadequate, and I still do to this day. Like that's something that I hold on to. Whenever I go to parties and see those people, I'm like, oh, I'm 13 and not good enough again. Like, it just goes right back to that.
I do too, but you know, as you get older, you realize like they're not that happy.
Exactly, and they all still hang out with each other.
Well, who else are they going to hang out with?
You're right.
You get to a certain level of wealth. I mean, like, you know, who else are you going to hang out with?
They're also some of the cheapest people I know.
Well, that's how they
stay. I'm just saying that's how they stay rich.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know.
I went into so much credit card debt just to like be in a birthday party and like pay for that person's part
exactly.
of the birthday. And so many memories of the richer people being like, I can't, I only got a glass of wine.
Remember? Yeah.
Remember. Yeah.
So then how did you guys like meet originally?
We met at NYU. And we're in the Tisch program.
Acting program?
Mm-hmm.
You were both in the acting program.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then we were doing like experimental theater, which was very much making your own work, which I feel really kind of douchey saying that in an all black outfit with a turtleneck on. But it was like a lot of rolling on the floor.
At NYU.
At NYU, yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the acting experience,
a lot of
right?
massages.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You massage a lot.
First year, there was a massage class.
There
Shiatsu
was?
Class. Yeah.
No, really?
Actually, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, you're paying a lot of money for that.
But so you went all 4 years?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we met our junior year of college, and then we became best friends, and we kind of united in a moment of feeling really insecure, and then went through breakups
what
at
was
the
that
same
moment?
Time. We were like creating work for this program that there was maybe 20 people, and we were all making our own stuff and presenting it.
Right.
And everybody was doing it. And then I was in the bathroom like with diarrhea, and you were too, essentially, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Diarrhea, yeah.
Cool.
Because did you both eat the same thing?
No, we just
both
had
anxiety.
Anxiety.
Deep anxiety of not, we were just talking about this in the car. And of just not being like, and something I still deal with, and you were just saying the same
diarrhea?
Thing. Diarrhea. Mm-hmm. I have IBS.
When you get anxious?
Yeah. No, I don't really anymore. I sweat, which is happening now.
I used to sweat.
Really? How did you change that?
I don't know.
Botox?
No. I mean, the more self-aware you are of it, the more, like, when I was in middle school,
yes,
that was like my biggest fucking horror was like, I was the kid with pit stains.
Me too.
And,
it
was
like,
and I went through so much, like all different deodorants. And my dad was a doctor. I'm like, is there a surgery I could get not, I was so freaked out about
it. Is there a surgery?
Sure, they could remove your sweat glands, I guess, but it's a little much. And then, you know, after a certain point, I was just like, fuck it. And like, I don't even wear deodorant or nothing.
And you don't smell or sweat.
What happened?
Well, I don't smell bad.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
You don't smell right now.
Well, I wear patchouli and I have for decades. So like
okay.
But the sweat thing was so embarrassing for some reason.
Same. I don't, the same thing. It would be winter, it'd be freezing, and I would have huge stains in my little limited two looking shirt.
Oh, no.
And I was trying to be feminine, and, you know, it just felt like the opposite. And then I talked to my doctor, and which was horrifying, which we maybe should use. And she prescribed me like medical grade
deodorant.
Yeah, I had that. And it worked.
It worked.
Yes. And I emailed my doctor recently, because you can email your doctors now, for the same thing. And she said, it's too dangerous.
Yeah, it scares me. That scares
it's bad
me.
For you.
Yeah, I remember I tried that stuff, and I don't know when it stopped, but like I don't have the problem anymore. I don't know why it went away, but my stress, it does different things though. Like over my life, like I've had back, you know, stress reaction. I've had tightness of chest stress.
Yes.
I've had headache stress.
Me too.
I've had tight neck shit. Like it's
or
just
coughing. I'll cough a lot. Sometimes.
Really?
I'll go through. I thought I had lung cancer, but it was really just anxiety. I think.
How'd you find that out?
Because I was taking like herbal medicine and trying to change my diet because they thought it was acid reflux, or they thought I'm a smoker, so they thought it was from smoking.
Right.
But I didn't quit, and then it just went away when the stress sort of.
No kidding.
Transferred somewhere else.
I'm glad that I never had the vomiting or the diarrhea thing.
Oh, you're so
really?
Lucky.
Yeah, I like, you know, like with stage fright or doing what I do to stand up, even at the beginning when I was terrified, I did not, you know, there's people that just like
can't.
They have to run to the bathroom.
What about constipation? Does it manifest in a different way?
No.
Okay. Sorry to go there, but
no, I mean, it usually would manifest in sweat. Sweat. Or like I had a lot of like tingling.
For me, I get that too. I get everything hands. You just said.
You have,
pretty much.
Well, you have claw hands in the show. That really happens.
That's a real thing. When I'll start breathing shallowly, and then all of a sudden my hands go into claws.
And they like you can't get them out.
Not till the end of the audition. It's happened in auditions.
There's a medical name for it. It's a real
carpal
thing.
Pedal spasms.
Really?
Yeah.
I've had the tingling limb thing is a big one. Like I just live with
Anna.
It. You have it too?
Oh yeah, everywhere.
But it's just like, and after a certain point, you're like, this is just
life.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm tingling right now.
I am too.
Really?
Where? Yeah.
Probably you just learn to zone it out.
Yeah.
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 Constant tingling, like in your.
It's like pins
arms.
And needles, kind
yeah,
of,
yeah.
But like
a little
more
bit of
sparkly.
Pins and needles. Yeah, yeah. And it, like sometimes it's both hands, and sometimes, and it's just sort of like. I guess this isn't going away.
No.
Because like when you have these symptoms, how many times can you go to the doctor and they're like, what?
Yeah, I know. It's nerves. It's nerve
and
stuff.
You just know that they're going to say that. Like I'm going to walk in there and I'm going to say like my back hurts. I'm having some tingling. I'm not breathing right. Could you tell me what I have? And they're like,
you're
what?
Fine. It's called. Well, that's
stop drinking so much coffee.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. I know. I'm a big advocate for advocating for yourself in medical
Well,
things.
Yeah, I mean, you should go to the doctor if you're really sick, but, you know,
but,
wait a minute. You can wait a minute.
Right, you can wait a minute. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Meditate like my mom and then see how you feel. I don't know.
That's really tough to learn. It's sort of like, all right, I feel this right now. Let's give it a day or two and see what happens. Because, like, you know, especially with when you have the health coverage with after or whatever, it's like, I can just go over to the Bob Hope Center and, you know, deal with this.
What's
now.
That?
How do you like the Bob Hope Center?
It's fine.
Do you trust them?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Why?
Do you trust them?
I don't know. I don't trust. I mean, I have a hard time trusting doctors just in general because I'm a hypochondriac.
Me too.
I used to be like this.
I check my pulse
constantly.
Me too.
You too?
Do you have flutters? Sometimes?
Yeah.
Where your heart's like, did it skip?
It skips. Yeah.
Yeah, mine too.
And I'm like, oh, it just went into my throat. What happened?
This is giving me anxiety.
All right, let's calm down.
No, I used to be a horrible hypochondriac, and I just
you've gotten better.
How do you fix it?
By taking some sort of pause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's like you know, wait a day or two. Like whatever you're experiencing. I mean, if you're walking and you know your vision's relatively clear,
right?
If you're not falling down or you know coughing up blood, it might pass.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can do that. I think I've stopped looking on WebMD. That's a major
improvement
for me.
No, you can't do that.
No, I know, but I was doing that every day for a while, you know?
She's also, you've gotten a full...
I haven't gotten a full scan. I would kill to get a full scan.
I thought you got a full MRI scan.
I went to Japan, and they do... In Japan, for $800, you can get like an MRI, a colonoscopy, all at once in one day.
Well, I did that for my heart, but like you get older, things actually do happen.
Right,
You know, you get blood tests, and you're like, oh, what?
Yeah.
Okay, what, I got to do what?
Yeah.
No more of that?
Yeah.
God damn it. You know, and then you have to adjust.
Then you have to change.
Yeah.
That's when it really gets real. That's when hypochondria starts to settle down a little bit. It's sort of like, oh, there are actual real things.
Right.
And I don't have most of them. When you're young, you don't.
I know.
So why panic about it before it's actually coming?
Yeah.
I don't know. I tried to figure out, what it came from. Because my dad was a doctor and he's a bit detached. So like one way you can communicate with them is like, I'm dying.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with wanting to feel comforted.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times you go to the doctor and they're like, well, we don't know. Let's do some tests. You're like, what do you mean?
right. Yeah.
What kind of tests?
Because it's funny because I'll have symptoms, but then I won't quit the things that are actually bad for me, like smoking. So it's a weird.
I smoked forever.
Cyclical.
You quit.
I did, but I'm on these nicotine lozenges. I have been for like a decade.
Oh, wow.
And they're great.
That's great.
Yeah, but like, and then you go to sleep with them. Like, you can do them anywhere. So you're just a nicotine sponge all day long. You don't have to go outside. You're just like half nauseous all the time.
It's not the nicotine for me. It's the
Oh, it's the nicotine.
Habit.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Yeah, just the.
But try going without the nicotine. How's that go?
Right. Yeah, maybe try the lozenges. Try the lozenges.
Okay.
I had to get blood tests for, like, I was checking my cholesterol.
Yeah.
And like fucking like I go to the Bob Hope, they do the test, and there's some other count. The white cell count's like fucked up, and I'm like, what?
No.
And she's like, I don't know, this wasn't happening before. I'm like, what does that mean? So then I got to go to a blood doctor, and he does a test, and you know, by the time I go to the blood doctor, he said the white ones are okay, but you have a platelets problem. I'm like, what does that mean? So then I'm looking at like, and it's like some of that shit, just like some
it's
days
so
are better than others.
Right.
Maybe you ate something.
Right.
You know, I had a cut on my finger that was probably escalating, but it's like, fuck it.
No, it's
man.
True. You shouldn't have a blood test once a year. year, we should have blood tests every day because it does change every day.
I thought you were going to say we shouldn't do it every year. We should do it like once a decade.
No, I'm saying,
and the hypochondriacs, like, we should get it every minute of the day.
Well, I'm just saying, not every day, but if we could. I mean, that was the whole thing with Theranos. I just watched that documentary. Yeah. So, but like, if you could see it, a pattern with the blood.
Yeah.
That it would be changing more effective.
All the day. Yeah. As opposed
or you
to
let go
and
you don't.
Or you let go.
Which I don't do.
Right. You guys bonded around diarrhea. And
yes, and
health,
right. and hypochondria is like a nice, you know.
But what was the
metaphor.
Thing you had to do?
What did
Why
you
were
say it best? I don't know.
We had how, to tell. To say. So it was studying Brechtian fairy tales. So we, yeah.
I'm already anxious and tired.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So we had to tell a personal story. Through a frame, like a frame that removes yourself from it. So there's distance, and me and Anna were just, you know. I kept telling stories that weren't working, so I couldn't even get through the first phase of it. And then everyone had already created these amazing frames, and you and I on the day of the show were just, we had been working all night on our own things and
the show was like four people watching. I mean, it wasn't like a huge thing.
Class.
It was in a like a classroom.
But it was an intensive theater program, so it was very, you know.
What's a Brechtian frame?
So it was through, I mean.
I couldn't tell you. Maya?
Well, it was like, so say I was telling a personal story about like masturbating. And then I'd have to put it through a frame of like, okay, this is a cooking show. And I somehow connect that through a cooking show of, of I'm telling this story, but it's in, it's sort of like what we do.
With
Pen 15.
So it's a device.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Now, okay, so you guys meet there and do you start working together there?
At Tisch? We made a dance together at that program and then we were just best friends.
Yeah. And then we kept talking about making our own work out of school and when we were auditioning for theater in New York and stuff and then we didn't. And then Maya eventually moved to LA.
Back home.
Yeah.
Where'd you live in the city? Dorms?
Dorms for a bit, and then I was in Brooklyn for a little bit in an apartment.
East Village.
Me
West
too.
East Village, Lower East Side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Loved there. Where were you?
Second between A and B.
Me too.
Get out of here.
Second between A and B.
No.
Where the murder was?
No, that was on Orchard.
Okay.
You were on second between A and B?
I was on second between A and B, and then I went to third between B and C. Moved a block.
How do you live between second and A and B? It's so specific.
I swear on my life, second between A and B, I loved it.
I was there in like the late 80s. It was insane.
It was a shit show.
What if it was the same address? I mean,
what was your address?
I'm trying to remember my address.
I think mine was 159 East. I could be making that up. East 2nd Street?
That might be right.
Something like that.
Was it the big building?
I don't think it was.
Like a lot of apartments?
No.
Mine was a very thin building.
Mine was thin.
Was it right next to where they did all the can recycling?
It was probably closer to B Avenue.
Yeah, me too. And it was on the north side of the street.
Yeah.
Was it right next to where they were always doing something with recycling cans? Was there like a garage right next to it?
No, I don't remember that.
I'll have to like check. I don't remember my address.
My window was facing the street.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Guys, we lived in the same place. What
we
can
lived
I
in
say?
The same apartment? Were you renting it
room?
From somebody?
Like a landlord.
Like a lady?
Man,
did somebody own the thing?
I can't remember. I did it with a friend. There were two bedroom apart. Was it two bedroom?
No.
Okay, so we were in a different building.
No,
it
was definitely one room with a kitchen that was the hallway to the bathroom.
Right. Mm.
There's like a room. There was a slight indention, and then the rest of the room. Then there was a kitchen that you had to walk through to go to the bathroom.
Like a railroad apartment.
Wait, that was mine. Really.
That was your apartment.
Well, I had a toilet in a closet.
I knew people that had that.
And then I had my shower was in a closet. Like it was literally a tiled closet.
Yeah.
And you close the door, and then you just, it was real weird.
A woman I was dating had a shower that was actually a kitchen counter that you had to lift it up.
Get out of here.
And there was a tub underneath it. It was like in the kitchen.
Okay, well that's cool.
Yeah, I guess it's cool. The way we had to adapt to the space in New York, it was
just,
and you're like
bonkers.
Excited.
Yeah, and you're like, thank you so much.
I think that Laura Keitlinger had a shower in the middle of her apartment.
Laura. Like
she was on the show.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
She's great.
So
I
good
love
her.
I've known her forever.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
She's great.
So
we
funny.
We did comedy together for like a million years ago. I mean, I've known her forever. And
I
she
love
had
her.
Yeah, I've been yeah. Well, I obviously I'd been to that apartment in the '80s that she as I recall when you talked to her, ask her if there was a shower in the middle of her apartment.
But is that the one of the counter that you just
nope.
said? Oh, this is
just a shower.
This is just a shower in the middle of the apartment. I'm wow. pretty sure. I think I might have slept at her house once for some reason. Not in that way.
Okay.
No. All right. So you meet there. You're in New York. And is this where you start talking about doing this show? No.
I think we were talking about making theater and, mm-hmm. you know, never did it. And then Maya, and we were doing like strange downtown theater. Mm-hmm. Then Maya
but
moved
not
to
with
LA.
The school. You're
but
out.
Not with the school.
No, out of uh-huh. like off.
Off, way. Off.
You had yeah. to do that. It was required as artists.
That's the only job you could get.
We wanted it.
But it's
yeah,
weird
a job,
because
I mean working for free.
This was the interesting thing to me is like I talk to a lot of people that that do the, you know, make shows and do stuff, but you're not in the sketch community.
No.
Like neither of you went through UCB. Mm-mm. You weren't, you know, part of an improv crew.
Probably because
like,
of anxiety.
No, but it's weird that like you guys were straight up actors
yeah.
doing that thing. Mm-hmm. But all the stuff that, you know, really a lot of people in comedy come from was happening. I mean, UCB was happening.
Right.
But you guys didn't even deal with that world.
No.
That's why it was sort of like when I saw the show, it's like one of them must be from that.
Right.
But you're not.
Right.
And that's a rare thing.
I think, well, I felt like under a rock and in the dark with all of that. Like I never really knew about a lot of that stuff, to be totally honest, which I know sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
Was working restaurants a lot and was really busy and just trying to like do it.
But you weren't, yeah. you weren't seeking to be comic.
No, I was going to say
you
didn't
actors.
Identify that way.
We were actors in theater.
Right,
I mean, that's,
right.
yeah, that's
who
what.
Felt at times, I don't want to speak for you, but like yeah. out of place because, and that's why I found the experimental world was because you could, because comedy and sadness for a lot of it was together. It was like
right.
you can play weird characters and that was fine. My first like agent meeting, I said to her, you know, I can play men, I can play women, I can
yeah.
play all ages. And she was like, bye. You know, because that's not what's
right.
traditional. Hey, and
we
I was
don't know what to do with you.
We don't know.
Right.
Yeah, that
that's
doesn't
too much.
Make sense.
Yeah, it's too much.
And but there was room for that in experimental theater. You could do all that, you know? So that's how
like,
we made that. And she's so funny. And so I was like, I want to make something with you that's funny because
we connected on it with our humor.
Humor, yeah.
But that's, but like, this is like kind of like informing as I'm sitting here what makes a show different from so many vehicles created by sketch performers
mm-hmm.
is that your instinct is really never to go broad, right? So you're not doing things for the laugh in the same way a sketch performer who is trained in improvising characters and it would do it like
mm-hmm.
that with which makes it more authentic, which has something to do because you guys are real actors to a degree. The way you approach these roles and why it's sort of seamless is because you're acting the emotions and you're not trying to be comic characters.
Yeah, I think that was probably a misconception that I had about like UCB and improv was,
yeah.
you know, and why it gave me anxiety to join that was because I was like, I can't deal with the pressure to be funny. If
right.
I feel like I have to be funny, then I'm going to clam up. And I know that that's actually not the intention. It's a lot of people who are in improv and sketch are like, it's not about that, you know.
But go ahead.
But no, you go. But
the thing is like with years of improv, you know,
right.
what they learn is like they'll say we don't play it for comedy, we'll play it straight. But they are so adept at knowing exactly how they're funny.
Right.
You know, and it becomes sort of a character. Like they fit a certain type.
Mm.
Whereas I think you guys in this show are playing the emotions, you know, very honestly. It's earnest. And the comedy just comes from the discomfort of these girls.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Does that make
yeah,
sense?
I think the comedy that I'm always interested in is when it's coming from a truthful place.
Right.
Or but when it's from a character or a situation.
Right.
As opposed to I'm not good. Because I respect people who can come up with really funny jokes. I wish I could. I can't. I'm
yeah.
just, that's not how my brain works.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times too, the things that we've talked about this a little bit. I keep doing that. We've talked about this a little bit that I always felt like I was laughing at the wrong times. So I could be watching
mm-hmm.
a comedy comedy, and I wouldn't be laughing when everybody else is laughing, or I'd be laughing alone.
Yeah.
Right.
Or I could be watching something really sad.
Right.
And I could be hysterically, I mean, we've been in that situation before.
So where many times.
The discomfort laugh.
The discomfort laugh, or something so sad, which is universal, which makes me think of something, I don't know. It's just so, it's something so insightful and tragic at the same time. For some reason, that's something that makes me laugh really hard.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't
know.
Or something very
response.
Serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like too serious.
Yeah. And I think a lot of amazing comedians actually, that's they're in.
Well, it's the laughter that should be crying.
Right. Right.
And it's super honest. Yeah, my favorite. Yeah. I don't really care if I'm laughing or I'm crying. I love to watch something and be like just destroyed.
Yeah. Release.
Personally.
Yeah.
Release. It makes me feel not alone. It makes me feel like I'm not a freak.
Yeah.
And everybody else is kind of fucked up too.
Well, I think that is what the show's about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is where that happens every day.
Right.
Is middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're like, and like to play that weird kind of like, because you're still forming, you know, like there, you know, like it's like this weird pivotal thing where you can feel all the other kids, like, they're just kind of coming into this, you know, adulthood.
Yeah.
And it's so horribly awkward.
Yeah.
And they have to kind of move through life with enough confidence. They don't, there's the insecurities of being in middle school, but you think you're kind of a grown up.
Right. Yeah. And then we talk about this a lot. You're kind of in between childhood and not even and teenagerdom. Like you haven't. There's this space in between. And Maya and I realized this when we both were like, I remember, like, don't tell anybody, but I was super flat, and then grew nipples before anything else. And then it was just this time of like a flat board and nipples. And then for someone else to go, me too. Mm-hmm. We'd never talked about. It's not something I talked about. I felt like the only freak with that. Yeah. You know, and to realize.
No, I had that. I had that.
Stop it.
Also, something that's really weird.
What?
This is messed up, but I don't know. Well, I don't know.
Say it.
Well, we're all the same at one point. Like, I was just thinking, like, how deeply flat I was.
Yeah.
And I'm not that far from it now, but it's a little different. And when I was a kid and how girls and boys are really similar. I don't know.
Vaginas
Anyways,
and penises sort of.
Wasn't thinking about that.
Like, what were you thinking about?
The flat,
how just like flat chest. Like you're all kind of the same physically from the waist up,
right?
Until all of a sudden,
middle school,
you get these nipples. At least that's what it was for me. These like unlucky puff balls,
right?
And
is that
and
what you
then
called them?
Yeah,
they were puff balls, mosquito bites
of an episode in the next season.
Maybe
unlucky puff balls.
Yeah, unlucky puff balls. And then you try to hide them, and then...
Yeah.
Well, didn't you do... Wasn't there an episode where you'd look at, like, one of the other girls' boobs, and they were definitely not her
puff
boobs?
Yeah, right. Because those were, like, balloons. That was me, actually, but balloons filled with sand.
Yeah.
Because I knew girls who had, you know, double
huge.
D's age, and that was its own nightmare. Everyone's going through their own, you know...
And then you start... bleeding out of your vagina. Yeah. I mean, we don't talk about that enough,
and
for sure.
It's a time of mourning, I think, because you're grieving your childhood. You're being forced to like...
Oh, that period episode's crazy.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're forced to leave that behind, and yet you're kind of excited to have these adult emotions, but you're not able to process them yet. So it's just a fucked up time of forming.
And I have to assume that the giant pad moment with the has got to be something that women relate to, like sort of that moment where someone tries to help out and they're like, here you go,
yeah,
you're like, what,
how do I fit this
diaper.
Into me?
Yeah,
there's no way. I mean, I didn't do it for a year. I hid it for a year because I was so ashamed. Mm-hmm. And so I would make pads out of toilet paper that were about half a foot.
But what in your why didn't someone say that was normal? How would you?
I was one of the first, I think, to get it my year, so no one talked about it, and I just felt like a monster.
Where was mom on that one?
I didn't tell her. I didn't want her to know because I thought it would make her love me less. Like, that
really?
Was the way I understood it. If I become a woman, I'm no longer a child. I'm no longer lovable.
Oh, not because you were menstruating, but because you were now a grown up.
Right,
I mean,
like
you knew
signifying.
It wasn't, but you knew it wasn't abnormal.
No, I knew it was normal. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. Also, the reality setting in of this is going to happen for the rest of my life, like once a month. That is a crazy.
Yes. And you think about like how we relate. I think about this a lot, but like bathroom stuff. You're not supposed to talk about it.
Right.
But yet all of these women are experiencing it, or girls. And then, I mean, if a penis bled for days every month and you have to like actually hide it because it's not cool to just like let it out.
Right.
I mean, that creates, that's, it's weird. And I will say that just you and I talking about it and putting it in the show was still scary. And yet this has been something forever.
Right.
And it's still weird to talk about. Like, it still makes, I don't know, a lot of my best girlfriend's stories about
their first
period or what it looks like or what it, I mean, you just don't talk about it.
Because it's, it is.
You're not taught it's hot. You know what I mean? And you're taught to be hot to some extent.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess guys had to hide boners in school. That was their thing.
Oh, it's the worst with your books?
With the book, or.
But that's not the same.
It's not the same. No,
because it was also accepted in the sense, and of like, that's funny.
But you get a lot of those boners that don't come from anywhere.
Right. Like that's got to be so weird.
That's odd.
But it's not blood.
Right.
Right. It's not blood they have to worry is, leaking out.
No, I like, as a dude, I mean, I don't know that I'd seen it explored that thoroughly. And I felt like I was seeing something for the first time. The struggle.
That's kind of nice. Yeah.
No, it is nice. Because I think that, like, if there's anything that's happening, which a lot is in terms of gender sensitivity, is that we, because of whatever shame happened culturally, that we don't, it's hard for men to be empathetic because we can't be women.
How you can, right.
And when you see something like that, you're like, oh God, that's a fucking nightmare.
Right.
Yeah.
And it just, we just,
it helps.
And something I was so grateful to Maya for was being willing to talk about masturbating at that age in this show. And it, as an adult, that's scaring me too, and that making me sad that it scared me, and then you being willing to do it and wanting us to put it in the show and all that.
It was the fuck out of me.
I thought the great thing about that was, well, I'm glad you transcended the fear, but that age where you masturbate, but you don't really know why you're having the feelings,
because
you can't attach them to things, and you're just looking at sand or whatever it
sand
was.
Dunes.
Like sand dunes, yeah.
I thought that was genius, because like there is a period there where you have no sex education, but you know you can come.
Right.
So like it's not really connected to anything, and like what it turns out gets you there is like something sort of sweet and poetic and not filthy.
Right. It doesn't matter. I'm just having these on feelings. And it's weird that I instinctually knew how to do it too. Mm-hmm. Like how to pleasure myself. Yeah. I mean,
we're animals.
You know how.
You just like, you're on a bike, something happens.
Right. And then to come the first time is pretty powerful.
I've been talking about it on stage lately, like about that.
Yeah.
For the first time.
Well, I stuck my dick in a bathwater coming out of a faucet.
And
like,
and it was just sort of like, what's going on?
And the
water was coming out hard.
Oh.
And I must have been like 10 or 11. Yeah. And somehow I got it in there.
Yep.
And I just left it in there.
And then it happened.
And you came your first time?
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had done something wrong? Or had you seen examples in the sense of, or heard it in movies or whatever?
I don't know. I don't know that I felt like I did something wrong. Mm. No.
You're like, I cracked the code.
Yeah, definitely. Oh. This is something, I'm glad I have this power.
Right. It
and
is
I grew
power,
up with, like, I, there was, I grew up with, like, for some reason, the Jewish kids, I don't know why, everybody was pretty open about jerking off. And, it was always a conversation, And I didn't feel much shame.
But not the girls. You didn't hear a girl talk about it. Probably.
No.
The thing that we, I mean, it's not that people know this, but.
I don't know if you talk about it amongst yourselves. We didn't talk. We didn't talk about it with girls.
Right.
No,
girls
but
didn't talk about it with each other.
Like,
it was
bubble.
Revolutionary for me in college as a progressive woman to hear Maya talk about it.
But me talking about it, then other people would start talking about it and be like, oh my God, you too? Okay, so I wasn't a freak or a pervert. I mean, that is what is instilled in your head as a kid.
Yeah, as a girl.
I did a joke about it because I don't have much shame about it, and I know girls masturbate and I've seen them do it.
Yeah.
You know, in front
of
me.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Of course, because mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's nice. And,
that happens.
And, yeah. Of course. But I used to do a joke about, you know, the first time you see a woman masturbate in front of you, there's sort of this moment where you're like, wow, that thing can take a beating. I thought it was like a delicate flower. I thought you, right. really, you can really go at it. That's great.
It's the human body. I mean, it's durable.
It is. It's yeah. resilient, that clip.
Well, there's just the intensity. Yeah, the intensity yeah, of yeah. anyone's particular style. You
right,
know, like they're,
right.
they're like it, what I'm speaking to is like I thought it had to be handled with a certain amount of delicacy.
Well, I mean, I have felt that way with penises
yeah.
also that right. of like it has to it's a deli I don't want to hurt because like
I was so scared to hurt it
oh
yeah.
my god and I definitely
I still
hurt
am
it.
Scared
you no. did hurt it
yeah
what, by pulling on it
I just like you didn't I was very well that was later but I was very
the two-handing was later
the yeah it was like
oh that
like rubbing like sticks rubbing. For
yeah.
a fire
oh yeah
it worked out
yeah okay.
he loved anyway. It right you said it was yeah. the
well,
best
you didn't know
hand job
well,
he ever had
oh my god okay
new trick
so what I was gonna say was what was I gonna say
about hurting a penis.
Oh, yeah, the first time I was yeah. very 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 scared mm-hmm. and yeah. I had been you know, slut shamed as a younger person not having done anything sexual. And there was a rumor that went around about me and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't end up going in that vicinity until junior year of high school, which in my town was very late.
Uh-huh.
And it was like the middle of the night in the woods next to a car.
Ooh. You and a dude?
Me and a dude. And he was my boyfriend. We had been dating for a while. He broke up with me soon after. And it was just like very dry in retrospect.
Uh-huh.
And I just didn't, I mean, nothing happened because it was, in retrospect, it was just like, I don't know, like like sandpaper on a, you know, banana.
I feel like I haven't given that many hand jobs in my life. I mean, maybe we're going into too many personal details, but
when we get home later, I'm just going to be reeling of like.
Well, I had sex before doing any of those things because
what?
I was too scared to
I know, I,
do
but
that.
Like,
do
I'm
you
not,
get that?
Yeah, I like hand jobs are okay.
Like who
but
cares?
Like, I can. I'm going to be.
You're
able
gonna
to do
it
better.
That's
yeah.
what I always think.
Yeah. And you don't want to like, and then if they get involved and they're trying, it's just like I'll do it. You don't want to be that guy,
right?
You, it's hard. Hand jobs are difficult.
They're hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I think that there's like a fear around, because it's not your own body and you don't
know. Everybody's different.
So yeah, you're going to hurt them and you might if you're me.
I'm a master with myself, you know, no yeah. one will ever.
Yeah, of course.
Beat
it, you know. Yeah, yeah, literally.
So to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, how is it 6 years?
Well, we didn't know how to write.
Yeah.
So that was part of it, honestly.
But what did the concept come from? You were just sort of you talking or you did a bit?
Yeah,
what?
We brainstormed with our other co-creator, Sam Zwiebelman.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, came up with the idea and then decided we wanted to write the show. But each year we would think it would happen and it just would go nowhere. And it also, the first script we wrote was like 58 pages with 82 characters. We didn't know what we were doing. And so it took, I don't know what, a couple years before we got to make a presentation
yeah.
or?
Yeah, we got yeah. to make like a 15-minute kind of short film to see if it would work.
Yeah.
And we thought that it did. And then so that helped. And it was definitely, I mean, I don't think it would have been made without getting to make that short thing to show
yeah.
that this is a concept that could make sense.
Right.
And then it took 2 or 3 years to, I mean, it kind of died and came back to life many, many times.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a miracle it was actually made.
And who was, they were into it?
They were into it from the beginning. I mean, we only pitched it to 3 places. And because at the time Fox was attached and they weren't making deals with a lot of places, I guess. And but we were lucky enough that, yeah, Hulu wanted to make it. And then, I fully underestimated how long it takes, like the contract closing and stuff like that.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every year I'd be like, it's going to be next year for sure. I got to keep it clear. And I'd be wrong.
And when you broke it down, you just went from your personal stories. Like these were the issues. Because each episode has a few things that were very specific
right.
to the time. And he got such great performances out of all the kids. It was kind of crazy.
They're so good. They're we really great. Lucked out. Yeah, I mean, I think that most of the episodes have moments that really happened to us. But, you know, we wanted it to be episodic but lightly serialized so that there was like a little bit of a story that you followed in an arc. And the arc was kind of needing each other to survive. You know, you can be a loner. You can be a reject, but by yourself you will die.
Yeah, yeah, right.
With somebody else, that's the difference, I think, of life and death at that point. And Maya right. and I, in real life, both had that person. So we, and I feel like that with you and our real friendship, mm-hmm. like it is that sink or swim yes. Yes. quality to it of like, how do I get through the day? Okay, I have Maya, you know, that's true. And so we wanted that to be in there and a loss of innocence to be in there, but still retain enough innocence that if we had future seasons, we could go into more mature content later.
While still staying in seventh grade. I mean, the yeah, goal the idea, would be that right. we would stay you're, in
Oh, you're not
going
to go to eighth grade?
The idea is like limbo forever, the metaphor of how we feel
as adults.
You know, that you never leave, but that we could continue to grow and change and you hopefully could, tell a lot of stories and a lot of experiences through that.
Right. Yeah. Like high school experiences, but in seventh grade.
Oh, so that's like a conscious decision. Like we're not going to go to eighth grade ever.
For like, now, yeah.
Because what would happen? I mean, we're open if you have any ideas. But like, like what's going to happen? You're going to grow and you're going to grow out of some awkward period and then you're going to assimilate more probably. I mean, that's
right.
That's I guess you could become more
rejected. The purpose of our, or at least our show is about being in that middle
being
place,
stuck.
Being stuck in between.
Yeah, I understand that. I respect that decision. But like it stays pretty shitty throughout high school.
For yeah. some people.
If you're Maya Erskine, I'm just
stay shitty.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have to think on it more.
It seems like the hierarchies still exist. And that you're still entering these weird insecure areas. You just
sure.
know more, but I think it would be harder to maintain the innocence.
Yeah, and the freakdom yeah. changes. I think that that you cross from like because I think the whole point in some way was like you're not child and you're not teen.
Right.
You're in this very bizarre in between stage where these you're. Body is changing or the surroundings and ideas of what you should know are changing, but you don't have the ability to properly cope with it. You don't know what to do. And I think if we gave it enough time to get older, then you would learn what to do. But
right.
who knows? Maybe we'll swallow our
maybe
words.
Maybe the last season is.
Well, I mean, you've got like a few adults. Seasons yeah. in seventh grade that, you know, no one's going to question.
Yeah, I think maybe that's what I was thinking too, that like we definitely have in exhausted seventh grade.
No,
so maybe so if we felt like that, we could continue on.
Yeah. Well, I loved it. Great job.
Thank you.
Nice
Thank
talking
you.
To
Thanks
you
for
guys.
Watching.
Nice
Thanks for having
you.
Us.
Thank
yeah,
you for
sure.
us.
Okay, that was fun. I love them. And I love the show. Pen 15 is streaming on Hulu now. And I guess we're going to be looking forward to a season two. I think they should grow up with the kids, though. They're going to have a real hard time with casting, because all those kids they used are that age. I think they should probably, you know, each season should be the next grade. I'm gonna be the guy that I'm gonna DM Anna and tell her. Maybe you should just keep growing up with the kids that you've already cast. I think I said that, didn't I tell him that? All right, no music, because I'm not home. Boomer lives.